Hi there, you're listening to Rick Rockhill Podcast, and I'm very happy that you're here today listening. And today's podcast is about women in film. In fact, here in Palm Springs, there's a nonprofit group called Palm Springs Women in Film and Television. And I am very happy to have with me the president of that organization, my dear friend, Kim Waltrip. Kim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. You're one of my favorite people, too.
It's been a long time since you've called into this podcast, actually. I don't know if it's been like 8 or 10 years, but it's been a while anyway. And I really appreciate you.
Yeah, I think like 10 years
today,
it has so. Been, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy how time
Can you
goes.
Hear me okay?
Anyhow.
I feel like there's a delay.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's great. I'm glad that you had the opportunity to be available today because certainly today happened to being the day of the Oscars. And whenever people listen to this, whether it's today or a month from now or 2 months from now, there's still a theme going on right now in the entertainment industry. And that's the role of women and the ability for women to be able to participate, and not only to participate, but to lead and to have accolades and access to the film and television industry, just the same way that men have. It's been a very male-dominated industry for so long. And so it's fascinating that you had this organization right here in Palm Springs, and I understand actually there's a whole network of similar organizations. So maybe we'll just pause for a minute and have you just tell our listeners, what is it about the organization and how did it get started? So just give us maybe a brief intro.
Yeah, I mean, this is just one chapter, our chapter of, there are thousands of them all over the world. And I think it was 2007, this chapter was founded, and Denise DeBerry took it over and made it an actual nonprofit. And we've been sort of going strong since then. You know, we're just nurturing and mentoring women and helping them with education or whatever advice or mentorships they need to be successful in this business. I mean, we're in Palm Springs, so we're 2 hours from Los Angeles, where, you know, maybe 10 years ago or so, it was unthinkable to think of having a film career so far away from Los Angeles. But we do it, and our organization has actually helped many people make films out in the Coachella Valley, and big studio movies have come out there as well. So we're just a networking organization that helps connect people and helps educate and inspire those to get out there and do their thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. I think especially for women who are, especially young women who are thinking about a career and wondering, you know, just maybe aspiring, knowing that there's a network, the ability to kind of just sort of understand it, and maybe it's not really an inside track, but having the support of other women and men who are involved too, who can say, hey, look, we think it's important that young girls, young women have the ability to have access to these kind of careers and use their skills and their talents. So I think it's really great, really.
Yeah.
I wonder,
and
knowing that – go ahead.
I was going to say that we do offer educational classes as well, because a lot of people don't understand what it takes to get out there to make a feature, a short film, a television show, whatever. And so we have these panels as well, where we bring in writers, production designers, craft services, editors, so people can get that inside glimpse of what it takes to have a career, and also educate them in the fact that there are hundreds of careers, you know, within the industry, and not just a director or an actor, but there are all kinds of things, and makeup and hair and production design and art direction. And so we try to offer some education there. Just, you know, if people are interested, at least they can learn about what it takes to get out there.
And why, you know, what are your thoughts about this, you know, as a general topic, why do you think it's so important for women to have a voice, to have a role in the entertainment industry? I mean, other than the obvious, right? I mean, are there any Wouldn't it really kind of
I think it's important
for
everybody to have a voice. I mean, no matter who you are. I mean, there are a lot of talented people out there, so nobody should be discriminated against. And, you know, women have interesting perspectives, as do men. And, you know, it's not just one mind that makes an industry. So I think just incorporating or including as many people and as many creative ideas as possible is beneficial to not only the industry, but for us as an audience as well.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly where my head was at, because I'm a guy, but if you're somebody who watches TV or goes to movies and everything you see is done from kind of a male point of view, we don't really know exactly, but that has to have some impact and affect you, and whether you can't connect or you don't relate, or maybe the subject matter isn't meaningful to you, whatever it might be. Right. I mean, I think that's kind of the point is not that you just have to, we're not doing this just for the sake of it. I think there's actually an impact to people as they're growing up and going through life, to know that they actually can, their perspective
relate.
Can be seen. I think, yes. And whether this is, the same holds true with diversity in a lot of different areas, right? We've seen so much of this in the last few years, and the concern about lack of diversity with ethnic groups and so forth. And, that just continues. I mean, why was it such a big deal last year when crazy rich Asians, had so much notoriety because it was an all Asian cast? And I thought, well, why is that so rare? Like, that shouldn't be, and then in this country, that shouldn't be so unusual. That
exactly.
Be other
and
than
it's becoming
white.
Less and less rare because, I mean, look at Parasite this year. It's up for both Best Picture and Best Foreign Film. So, and also that movie Roma. It's getting less and less. People are open to it, and I think it's wonderful. I mean, we're engaging the entire world now and all ethnicities and genders and non-genders and just everybody. So it's pretty wonderful. I think we're on a really good path.
Did you, and you're early in your career, Kim, as a producer and things that you've done, did you ever encounter any barriers, or maybe it wasn't outright discrimination, but maybe just a barrier that was tough for you to get through?
Yeah, I, as a producer, you're kind of in control because, you're the one in charge and the one that's gotten the project together. But there have been moments, yes, where I have been in a male-dominated a meeting where it tends to get a little misogynistic and, I have to speak a little louder and, my body language has to call attention. So it's like, hello, I am here and I have an opinion and I have thoughts and, it's important to listen to me. But I really haven't had any horrible circumstances where I've been affected by that, which is wonderful. So I just trying to make myself heard and seen is about it. And I try to be inclusive as well. I don't even think about it. When you're casting, you don't even think about color of skin or anything. I mean, it's just not a thought in my world. Actually, what it comes down to is finance. Who can finance this picture, and how can we make it successful? So,
money's green, no matter who it comes from, I guess, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Kim Waltrip. She's the serving president of the Palm Springs Women in Film and Television organization, and you can find out more about that organization at PSWIFT.org or pswift.org. And it is a nonprofit, but there's lots of cool things that the group does. And I think from all the educational programs that you've got going on, I think it's really, there's a lot for people to get involved and to see. Recently, you had the Broken Glass Awards, and those were, right? Let me just maybe a brief mention about that. I think that's pretty impressive, too.
Yeah, every year we honor women who are just, outstanding in their field. And this year we just had a wonderful slate of women: Dolores Robinson, Virginia Madsen, Sierra McCormick got the Rising Star Award. Sierra has a film coming out in March, I believe, and it's really good. I've seen it. And a couple of local women as well who've done amazing work in philanthropy, and we call one the Desert Diva. It's somebody within the desert that shines and has done wonderful things in our industry. And so we do that every year, which is great. And this year we're going to move it to an evening. So we're going to bring out the glam and, you know, have a full-on red carpet and everything. And that's going to be on October 24th. And then we have lots of, you know, we have mixers and we have panels. And we also have a speaker series. And our first one for the year is actually February 20th, where we are going to, yeah, it's coming up. And we're going to hear from two-time Oscar winner and two-time Golden Globe winner, Nick Vallelonga. He won for last year's Best Picture, Green Book. So he's coming out to speak with the, you know, it's open to the public, so anybody can come. And the actor who played George, who played the bass in the movie, Mike Hatton, he's going to come with Nick, and so we're just going to have a conversation with them, and it's going to be fabulous. Last year we had Peter Bart, we had Oscar winner Mark Harris from the movie Crash, we had actor Willie Garson from Sex and the City and White Collar. So we've got a slate this year already lined up. So we've got Nick coming up February 20th. We have the actress Madchen Amick from Riverdale, she's going to be in May. And then we have novelist Luann Rice, who will join us in September. So pretty exciting stuff here.
Yeah, these are, I mean, really an impressive slate you have lined up. And I think the speaker series is it's pretty cool. I mean, tickets are $35 for non-members. Members are $25 with discount there. But you can get information right from the website at, again, pswift.org. There's information there to sign, to get tickets and so forth. So take me through what that's like, the speaker series. So is it an intimate group? I mean, how large are those, and is it an opportunity for people who come to actually talk to the speakers afterward? What is that environment like?
Absolutely. Actually, we have a wine reception beforehand. We're doing this at the Mary Pickford Theaters in Cathedral City. Pickford Presents, it's called, and they do a wine reception for us to begin with, and we have our little step and repeat there, and the speakers come up, and they'll mingle with people, and we go into the theater. We do a conversation with, and our moderator is Patty Grabeau, who used to have a television show in the Valley, and she's very good at it, so she's going to be speaking with them, and then we open it up for questions, and it is intimate in the sense that, I mean, it's, you know, we might have at the most, I think, well, the most we can have, because the theater doesn't hold more than 200. So it is intimate, and afterwards they always mingle and they always, you know, just chat with the audience, and everybody has been very gracious, and it's been a wonderful experience. And you get insight. I mean, it's kind of fun to hear how people's careers start, and, you know, it's a great story how Mike Hatton got the job as the bass player, and so it's just kind of fun to listen to, you know, that insight that you wouldn't normally hear otherwise. You know, you just don't get in there, and you can ask your own questions, and yeah, so it's really fun. It's just a great, again, it's all educational. I mean, anytime you can get insight into how somebody started, it's always wonderful to hear and inspiring, and so hopefully we'll bring that to everybody on the 20th.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I always enjoy going to speaker series type things in different industries too. And my background is not in entertainment by any means, but I have a lot of friends who are in the entertainment industry. And I think what you glean from these is you have someone who's sharing their, you know, as you said, their past, their perspective. And sometimes it can be inspirational. You get ideas. And I mean, it could just be pure entertainment. And that's a nice, you know, how many opportunities do you have to sit and talk to someone who's an Oscar winner and, you know, that kind of thing. But for anybody who has an interest in the filmmaking, in the entertainment industry, I mean, what a great way to stimulate your interest and your ideas and your brainstorming by going to these kind of things. So I absolutely think it's a great opportunity for anybody. We're going to be right back with a quick break, and we're going to continue talking with Kim Waltrip. and be right back after these messages.
One in three adults has prediabetes. That means it could be you, your best man, your worst man. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org to know where you stand. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
I rescue around 75 to 100 dogs a year. A lot of these dogs that come to me are very malnourished, extremely stressed, and they're overall just not healthy. A friend of mine reached out to me who's been in the pet industry for well over 30 years, and he told me he was developing a new dog food dedicated to gut health. I'm in an industry where seeing is believing, and as a rescuer, I make sure the first step in the process is these dogs get as healthy as they could possibly be. Now all my dogs eat Lucy pet food.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance, reminding you that when you adopt a shelter pet, you discover all the things that make them unique. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
And we're back. You're listening to the Rick Rockhill podcast. I'm speaking with Kim Waltrip. She's the president of Palm Springs Women in Film and Television. It's a nonprofit organization based right here in Palm Springs. And Kim, I'm really grateful that you're here today. I'd like to give some more information to our listeners about the how you got into being a producer and what your kind of your own path was. So you've had some interesting projects. I mean, I just mentioned that you've recently had 7 Days to Vegas, nice big hit that's get on iTunes and Amazon and a few other places like that. What a great film that was. But there's a couple of big projects you've had recently. But before that, you kind of had to get in and find your own path. And what was that like? What did you have to do?
Well, it's funny because I was living in Palm Springs, and somebody brought me a script and said, hey, I want to go make this movie. And I said, okay. So I had no idea what to do. I mean, I kind of had an idea because I used to be an actress, so I kind of knew a little bit of what needed to be done. But I just decided, I'm pretty fearless, and I just decided, okay, I'm going to take this on. And it was a movie about Fleet Week. It's called Adopt a Sailor. It's on Amazon as well, starring Bebe Neuwirth and Peter Coyote and Ethan Peck. And so that meant we had to shoot Fleet Week in New York, which was coming up. And then we would worry about the rest of the movie later, but we didn't want to miss the opportunity of Fleet Week, which only comes once a year. So I actually paid for the trip to New York myself and worried about fundraising after that. And because it was a movie about the Navy got behind us, and when you work with the military, they tend to help you out. So they flew us on helicopters. They picked us up in New York, flew us out to sea, and we landed on the ship, and then we integrated our sailor into the rest of their crew. And so our sailor was in when they got into New York. He was a participant of the manning of the rails, it's called. And so we were filming the whole time. We got to use the ship bunkers, and we had a PAO officer sort of guide us around. And then the USO was having a big ceremony in Times Square, so they put our sailor on the Jumbotron. So we got a lot of things for free, which was really amazing. It was incredible. And so we did that over like a 3-day period. And then we went back to the desert and said, well, now how are we going to film the rest of this movie? And so I was doing little packages, trying to get some fundraising together. And just so gratefully, our friend Mike Merricks put up the funding for the movie. And what was funny is we were going to film the rest in New York because it takes place in New York, but we wound up filming in Palm Desert, which is weird. So you see our sailor walk into a building in New York, but inside it's actually Palm Desert. I mean, you can't tell that. Everybody's going to know now because I told them. But so we shot the film there, and The most difficult part about that, I mean, it was great because it was so much cheaper, and Mathis Brothers was incredible, and they gave us all this furniture. They, you know, they redecorated the home to make it look a little more, you know, New York-y, and so they were so lovely. And the hardest part about the whole thing was it was summer, so it's like a million degrees in Palm Springs, and you have to turn the air conditioner off when you're shooting because it makes noise. And the worst part was the crickets. We couldn't get the damn crickets out of the house because, you know, doors are opening and closing and crickets are coming in.
Right.
And so when we were editing the sound, our sound editor just had a heck of a time trying to get rid of these crickets. So we had a lot of ADR. And I just remember BB looking at her ADR line list and she was just going, "Are you kidding me?" And she just did a remarkable job. So, but yeah, so that's how I got involved. I just kind of did it. I just started reading everything like, okay, what do I need to do? And you know, I kind of tell people that now because they ask me, how do you make a movie? And I say, go make one. Because now, I mean, back then we didn't have these cell phones that were 4K or 2K or whatever. And now anybody can, you can go make a movie, just go make it, just go do it. And you can start with a short film, you know, start with 10 minutes. YouTube, you can start with however many minutes and just practice your way through it and, you know, read a lot and just get out there and make it happen.
Well, so I've said something earlier, Kim, about being fearless, and that's important. I mean, you have to be able to just jump in and get your feet wet. I mean, it's great if you have a mentor or it's great if you have people to help you, but sometimes, I mean, most people don't, and they just have to just plow ahead. I think that that's a really great point you made earlier.
Exactly, and I'm not ever afraid of the learning curve. I mean, I've taught myself so many things just because I'm like, okay, let me just try it. And I mean, I taught myself how to use the computer like in 19 whatever it was. It was just like I just started playing around, and you learn by doing. And so, you just have to get out there and do it. Don't be afraid of it, because fortunately, it's not all on film now, so it's digital. You can just erase it and start again.
Right. I want to switch gears a little bit about talk about filmmaking in Palm Springs. And this is, it's kind of near and dear to my heart. It's our hometown here. And what is the state of filmmaking in Palm Springs? Is there a thriving community?
Yeah.
Are there films being made here? And what's it like?
There's actually one. It's funny. There's one called Palm Swings. Palm Swings was made in Palm Springs, and I think it's on Showtime or something. But then another one that's coming out, just got bought at Sundance, is Palm Springs. But they didn't necessarily shoot in Palm Springs area. I think they were out in Joshua Tree and Palmdale and stuff. I mean, there are a lot of places that look like Palm Springs. We shot some of 7 Days to Vegas in Palm Springs. I shot another film in Palm Springs. There have been a few films, but, you know, nowadays it's all based on incentives and where to get the biggest bang for your buck. And that used to be when people would go to Canada, and then it was New Orleans, and now it's Atlanta. Everybody's shooting in Atlanta, Alabama, New York, of course, but it's all about the money. I mean, where can we shoot? Where can we get the biggest bang for our buck? So when you're financing a movie, you've got to, you know, stretch those dollars out. And California does have a lottery system, but I think it depends on the budgets. But I think this last year it was only 5 films got the incentive. So it makes it difficult to stay local, you know, from a business perspective. But still, I mean, there's no place like Palm Springs, so those beautiful palm trees and that mountain jutting up in the background is kind of special. So, yeah.
Talk to me about the networking, because whether films are actually shot here is one thing, but the networking and the ability to kind of, you know, whether somebody comes here because they want to get into the business or they just live here and are inspired. What is the networking scene like, and you know, how would somebody go about meeting people like yourself and other directors and producers? I mean, so many people from the entertainment industry and certainly Hollywood, Beverly Hills and such come out here anyway, but what's the networking scene look like?
Yeah, well, Palm Springs Women in Film is one of them. You know, we have a lot of events. We have mixers. We have a mixer coming up in March at Bernie's in Rancho Mirage, and there are a lot of organizations where people can get involved and just start talking to people, a lot of writers groups. And, you know, a lot of stuff is done over the internet now, so reaching out via email. I mean, you know, personally, you know that I have a place in Palm Springs, and then right now I'm in Idaho skiing. My brain's out because it's so beautiful. But nobody knows where I am, and so you can still network online and reach out to people electronically and get to know them. And, you know, I mean, it's good to pop into L.A. every now and then just to touch base with everybody. But there's a lot of networking in Palm Springs. A lot of people are moving to Palm Springs, actually, from L.A. because it's, you know, it's 2 hours. It's not that far, and because a lot can be done electronically, I think people are moving a little bit further out, but... I mean, I think we have an enormous amount of organizations where people can get in touch with other people, and those people know other people, and they can refer you and get you in touch with someone, perhaps. So, yeah, I don't think there are big barriers. I think we're just fine where we are, and I'm very happy to live there. Personal.
Yeah, well, I mean, the nice thing about Palm Springs is sometimes you can just throw a stone and you can find somebody who's in the industry. You mentioned Virginia Madsen a minute ago. I was at a restaurant last week and she just popped in and you know, there she was. So we were talking
exactly.
At the bar. It's kind of funny, small world. But I think for anybody who – go ahead.
I was going to say we got her for the Broken Glass Awards because of you, because we were, you know, putting a list together of, you know, who we wanted to honor. And I remember you saying you saw her in a restaurant. I was like, oh, my gosh, Virginia Madsen, how fabulous is she? So you're the reason. So see how that works?
Yeah, that little networking right here between us. So I think
exactly.
There's lots of opportunity for people. And I think certainly those of us who live here in the desert, it is a thriving community. I think the Palm Springs Women in Film and Television is a great place for people to get involved. So people can join, right? You're an aspiring
anybody can join.
Or,
you don't have to have a resume that's extensive.
That.
Yeah, you can just join.
Okay. And so there's membership levels you can join as a student,
correct.
Right? I think I know you have like a student program for
yeah.
$25.
Luminary,
like
with students, with general. Yep,
uh-huh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
and
all the information is on the website. Yeah.
Right. So there are meetings or mixers you mentioned. There's different things that if somebody were to volunteer, what kind of things could, what are the volunteer opportunities?
Well, they could help with our events. We have a group together right now we're starting a short film committee where our members are going to actually make a short film. So we're going to start from scratch. We're going to, ask for submissions for the scripts or we might decide to write it ourselves, and we're going to go through the whole process. And we're doing this so that people know, they get that hands-on experience of how to make a movie. And that was really important, you know. I mean, anytime you can have a tangible way to teach somebody, I think it's always beneficial. So everybody's really excited. We have a lot of people signed up. So if people want to volunteer, they can actually get involved and join that committee. We have our educational committee. We have our speaker series committee. We have a Broken Glass Awards committee. We have a scholarship committee because we do hand out scholarships at the Broken Glass Awards every year. And right now we're changing our logo. We're freshening it up. So we have a little contest going out there that ends on March 5th, I believe, where people are submitting logo ideas, and the winners of that get 2 tickets to our Broken Glass Awards. So we're kind of fun.
And for people who are feeling generous, they can donate. The organization is a nonprofit,
yeah.
And so I know on the website you've got a donation page.
We do, and you know we hand out these scholarships every year. And last year at the Broken Glass Awards, we handed out 3 scholarships, each for $1,000. And oh my gosh, these kids were so excited. We don't make it complicated. We just want to fulfill your dream. So one wanted to take some classes in New York, wanted to go to New York to take these intensive classes, and it wasn't necessarily college-based. It was just, it was a trade. He wanted to just excel in his trade, so we gave the scholarship, and so happy. And, I mean, it feels good for us, too. I mean, that's what we're there for, to inspire, mentor, and to help people. So we love giving these scholarships away. So yes, donate, donate.
Yeah, and
we can do more.
I think what something I'm really impressed with too the organization does is your Book Pals program, and I think that's really a big deal because illiteracy is an issue all over the country, certainly right here in the Coachella Valley, and you have to be able to read. That's your opportunity for everything. And then if you can read, then you know, your imagination just can go so many places. You know, I think people who've listened to this podcast over the years know I'm a big Dolly Parton fan. And one of the things that she's really behind is her imagination library and all the millions of books that they've given away, because she grew up in dirt poor. And she said, we didn't know how to read. But my dad made sure we had some books and learned how to read, and it changed her life. So Book Pals, right here in our Coachella Valley, you guys have this wonderful program. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was actually started by Screen Actors Guild, and it was for that very reason, to get kids reading. And our organization, or our chapter, actually is thriving, and it's spearheaded by Terry Britton, who does an amazing job at getting readers together. And she has gotten so many grants, and she's had books donated, and she has, I think like maybe 56 readers or something that go around to these schools, and they choose a book and they read to the kids, and the kids love it. Like Joyce Bulifant, who's an actress, she's one of the Book Pal readers. She goes into these classrooms. They didn't, they won't necessarily know who she is, but she's an actress, so she reads these books, and the kids love it. And then we donate the books to the school, and Terry's got, I think, just about every school in the valley on board. So I've given away thousands and thousands of books. And then coming up, the movie Call of the Wild is coming out, and one of our members decided to. He's one of the readers as well, and he read to the sixth grade class at a school, and he went and purchased tickets, movie tickets, for each sixth grader. I think there's like 100 of them and over all the classes. I'm not sure of the number, but he bought tickets so they could all go see this movie, and because they all read the book. So that was their book, the sixth grade book, and he read to them, and now he's taking them all to see the movie. So it's an incredible part of our organization, and Terry Britton does just a fabulous job, and it's wonderful getting our kids to love books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important. I think that's the absolute most important thing, that kids need to have a love for reading too, and have it be fun. It can't be.
Stories are fun.
One of the problems with the problem with education sometimes is that they kind of read this line and memorize this, and it's not fun. Books are supposed to kind of be a little bit of an escape, and fun to curl up with a book or your Kindle or whatever. But you have to be, to have access to them, and so I think it's really great. I think that there are some women actresses and there are some directors and things who have stories to tell about that, how they got their break because somebody took the time to give them a book and something kind of inspired them from that. Do you have any stories like that? Anybody you've known, any actresses or anybody who's in the industry who felt like they probably weren't someone who was going to make it, but somehow they sort of broke through all those, against all the odds. Have you, anyone you kind of run into in your career along those lines?
The people that I've run into that make that happen are people who are so dang determined. I mean, tenacious people, I think, will make it happen no matter what. And sometimes it just takes a little inspiration, and other times I think it's just them. They're just going for it. They've got dreams, and they just go for it. But I don't know. There are so many people that I've encountered over my career that have inspired me, and that I've seen like have overcome odds, like incredible odds, and they've just made it happen. So I can't pinpoint one in particular because I'm inspired by so many.
What? Tell me, of all the films you've made, Kim, which one stands out to you as probably the most inspirational, or something that really kind of affects you, or some way gets you out of bed every day thinking about it?
All the ones I've made, of course. But, they're all so different. They all mean something differently to me. my first one, of course, because I don't know how we did it, but we made it happen. So that one's very special. That's Adopt a Sailor, the one that I love. They're all different. I mean, there are comedies, there are horror films, there are Christmas movies. So, but one special one is The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby. And, you know, that when it came to us, it was two movies. It was his version and her version. It's with Jessica Chastain and James McAvoy. And mm-hmm. I was intrigued by that because no one had ever done anything like that. So it was actually going to be two films. And that's the way it was shot. And when it premiered in Toronto, it was premiered, you could see his version first and then hers, or you could see hers and then his, or whatever. And then it was picked up, and they decided to go to Cannes, so they made a them version. So they combined the mm-hmm. two of them. And no matter which way you see those movies, it's heartwarming, heart-wrenching. It's inspirational yeah. as well, and the performances in that are just incredible. And it was a really special film because it was just mm-hmm. outside the box thinking and filmmaking. And I just really appreciate them. But if I was going to recommend you see them, I would recommend seeing him first and then her. And then later watch yeah. them just to see how they did it all. But, I mean, the editing alone is incredible. They should have gotten yeah. the Oscar for that for sure.
I watched both of those. I think I did see them. But, yeah, I did watch him first. And it blew me away, honestly, those films. I was really yeah. impressed by it. Are those on iTunes now or whatever it is? On,
you know, they were. Amazon? I think they were on. Yeah, I think they're on Amazon
Netflix?
Right now.
Okay.
I think
okay,
they're on
great.
Amazon. Yeah. I think mm-hmm. all three versions are on Amazon. So, yeah.
The whole
those.
Movie
oh,
industry has changed so much
oh,
now.
Yeah.
My gosh. I mean, I can
yeah.
remember, you know, when all this started becoming more accessible, it was a big deal to get a, you know, your VHS copy, right? And it was this thing you had, and
yeah.
we had all, then you had bookcases to hold all your VHS tapes of movies.
I know.
Anyway, obviously the whole streaming thing. So, you know, that's a pretty big deal, a big shift. And you, as a producer, you
yeah.
have films and you have them out there. And, you know, have you had any experience in how that's changed how you produce films and when you go to a project,
yeah.
when you're negotiating?
Oh my gosh,
tell
yeah.
me about that. What's that like?
Well, you know, when I did my first film, people were still going to the movie theater. People don't tend to go there very much anymore. You know, they tend to focus on big blockbuster films and tentpole movies. And once in a while, something will break through and it'll get a theatrical release. But I think Hit and Run was our biggest theatrical, where I think we opened in 2,000 theaters or something. But right after that, it just started dwindling down because of Netflix, all the streaming platforms. And so people weren't going to the theater anymore. So that
mm-hmm.
affects your budget because that's where they make a big chunk of their money back. And so now it's like, you know, unless you've got a studio paying for these films as an independent filmmaker, you better keep your budget down and cast high if you want to see any money, any return back. But the streaming platforms, it's like, I just wonder what's going to happen because there are so many of them, and it's not stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
how many of those are you going to purchase? And then how do you
sure.
know who to make a film for? Okay, are we going to make it for Quibi, you know, which is, I think it's like a 14-minute episode, or, you know, are we going to focus on Netflix? But, you know, it's Netflix, you know, they're going to pay for it and tell you how to do things anyway, and it's interesting. I mean, it's the Wild West out there, and I just don't know what's going to happen. Everybody's
mm-hmm.
got their own subscription now, so Disney's got one.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Apple.
I mean,
in
the music
yeah.
industry has changed dramatically, and when you're listening to songwriters, singers, entertainers, they'll tell you, the first ones to tell you, we're not making any money selling records anymore. And
right.
by records, of course, I do mean
yeah.
streaming.
Yeah, nobody
but
makes DVDs anymore.
No, but they're not making money doing that. They make money touring, of course, and they come out with new
right.
music just so they can go on tour and get people to come to the theater. But I think, you know, that's very interesting because, you know, they were the first ones kind of hit, and now this whole movie industry, as you say, is completely different. So can you still make money making a movie? I mean, is that still is it still possible? I mean, other than the huge blockbusters, right? As an independent filmmaker, is there still space, and is that going to affect the quality of independent films that are being made?
Yes, you can, but again, you have to be conscious of your budget. I mean, you know, you can't make a $50 million movie with nobody in it and hope to get your money back. You just have to be very aware of who your audience is now. I mean, more than ever, who is your audience? And you've got to keep your budgets on track with your cast and what, you know, how you're going to get that money back. So, yes, you just have to have a strategy, and you have to know where you're going before you even start nowadays, because there are so many variables.
Well, and your budget, I mean, it's the whole post-production and then the PR. I mean, you could, even with a very tight, well-managed budget, you could make a thrifty film, but then have no money left to promote it, and then it's not going to go anywhere. I think, right, that's probably another lesson that people need to hear.
Exactly. So when we did 7 Days to Vegas, we knew we had the poker community. I mean, it was a demographic we knew we could tap into. And fortunately, Vince Van Patten, who stars in it, he's one of the spokespeople on the World Poker Tour. So we asked them if they would help, you know, get involved with the movie. And they were like, absolutely, we love this. It's great. And so we were fortunate enough to have them running commercials for us, advertising with us. And we had a marketing team that we put together, and we got the film out there, and we worked our butts off. So, but you almost have to have that awareness before you go into production as well, because there are so many films out there now, and it will just die if it doesn't get any attention. And you can't just, you know, leave it up to social media, unless you have someone on social media who has about 70 million followers or something. But
sure.
You just have to be, very conscious about your marketing plan.
Sure, it's complex. I mean, in fact, that's a great example for anyone listening. If you haven't seen 7 Days to Vegas, go on the website, 7daystovegas.com, and you could see where to buy, you know, where to watch it or where to buy it. And I think it's a great example of an independent film that got picked up, and you guys, you know, seem to have done a really great job. And what a cast. My gosh, it's a dynamic cast.
Really
great story. And it's a hilarious movie. I think it's a great example of an independent film that can be made and can be brought to market. And I mean, hopefully all made some money with that and had some fun along the way too. But it is important. And Eileen Davidson is in that film, and I think she's one of the few women in the whole cast. Wasn't she?
I know, right? We're talking about, but you know, it's that world, the poker world. And it's based on a true story, so we didn't want to change that up much. I mean, it was Vince's poker game, and that involved a lot of men. And Eileen was there, of course, and there are other women there, but the story focused on his game and that bet. So we didn't want to stray too far away from that, but. I mean, so many of my female friends come up to me and they're like, we love that movie. So
it was a great film.
Exactly. It's a great film. Everybody can appreciate it because it's fun. It's full of shenanigans. And I think everybody will get a kick out of it. So thanks for promoting that.
Well, sure. Well, I think before we wrap up, I'll just remind everybody that the Palm Springs Women in Film and Television, you go to their website, pswift.org, and the upcoming speaker series is happening. You can find out more about it from the website, but the first one is February 20th, and the two great speakers there, you can go to the website and get tickets, and you'll see the rest of the events coming up this year. Go out and support women in film. Kim Waltrip, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Rick. I love you.
Enjoy your skiing. Take care.
All right. I'll see you soon.
You've been listening to the Rick Rockhill Podcast. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you next time right here.